Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. My guest today, I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Dr. Peter Cookson. And Dr. Cookson is going to talk about the Black Plague that happened in the 14th century. Hi, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you, Cynthia. much better.
The Black Plague killed many millions of people, right?
It did indeed. Right. It certainly did. Many millions.
So tell us a little bit about it. How you think it started and where it went and the ramifications of what it did.
There's many interesting aspects of the Black Plague. As you study it, the standard history is that the Black Plague originated in Asia, Central Asia, and was carried by Italian traders who brought it from the Black Sea, interestingly enough, to a town called Messina in Sicily, and from there it spread further north into Europe. The question you ask is, that's a location, but I think more interestingly enough, you want to know how did it start or where did it really start? And that information is more difficult to get to. And I wanted to use the term ferret, but it may well be one of the hosts. The organism that's responsible for the Black Death likes to live in rodents, and it moves from one rodent to the next, or one host to the next, by fleas or insects that bite the rodent and then ingest the organism into its mouth parts, and then, pardon me, moves from one rodent to the next. They usually move from a dead rodent to a live rodent. They're very, very sensitive to the warmth of mammals. Another, along with that piece is we know that the organisms responsible for the Black Death, commonly referred to Yersinia after Dr. Yersin, a Swiss microbiologist, also lives in the rodents present in eastern Oregon. For instance, when I was in Oregon practicing there, the health department would on occasion report the incidence of a case of bubonic plague in eastern Oregon.
And, wow.
Yeah, I was puzzled by that, but yeah, every year or so there would be one or two cases that would pop up. The organism is sensitive to antibiotic treatment, so the physicians who live out in that area are aware of the fact that it is endemic in eastern Oregon. Subsequently, I explored further and found out that, oh yeah, there are rodents in Arizona, New Mexico, Southern California, and Northern Mexico that also carry bubonic plague, and every so often an indiscreet farmer or camper or what have you would be bitten by a flea that is a carrier of the Yersinia pestis. And so they would deal with it promptly because we now have the ability to treat the disease using antibiotics. So it's endemic. So it's endemic in the Western Hemisphere, and undoubtedly, it's endemic in Central Asia. So the disease progressed from Central Asia to Western Europe, and the point of entry, as described by the historians, is Sicily. Then it went to Sardinia and Corsica, which are the islands just to the west of Italy. And then it managed to get from there into the Italian peninsula and then up through Western Europe. And it behaved in an unusual fashion to the point where people were curious or wondered, or how did it get from point A to point B? Because the organism kills the rodents, and fleas don't do well. They will survive in a dry environment for a considerable period of time. And then along comes another rodent, and they may be able to leap onto the new rodent and or human, and then propagate the plague into more humans and more rodents, and thereby propagate their existence. What is of interest is that the, among other things, that the Black Death lasted for an extremely long period of time, hundreds of years. And questions arose as I did some research on it is how did the rodents and the insects deal with the Little Ice Age when it came along? Did they go into, did the fleas go into hibernation, which they can do, but generally they don't last much more than 6 months or so. So that's interesting. How did the fleas get from Western Europe to the British Isles? Did they take a boat ride? You know, how did that happen? Is it possible to do that? That was the theory, was that the rats climbed up the lines or the ropes that held the boats to the pier and then brought with them the insects or the fleas that were then responsible for spreading the Black Plague in England or the United Kingdom. And, you know, that's possible, but the organism is so incredibly lethal that it doesn't seem likely. However, the organism does, it's another thing, and I have to back up a little bit. When I said it's incredibly lethal, what I should say is that one form of the organism or one form of the Black Death slash bubonic plague is incredibly lethal in terms of the length of time between contracting the disease and the time that you're dead is can be as short as 2 days, maybe 3 days at the very most. That's called the pneumonic, P-N-E-U, pneumonic plague that is a variation on the theme of the bubonic plague, and the bubo refers to the enlarged lymph nodes, which are exquisitely painful and tender, that occur from the more usual form of plague, which is contracted by flea bites. And the pneumonic plague is contracted by aerosols. That is, one person who has the pneumonic plague coughs and sneezes or and expels into the air in the immediate vicinity the organism, that which is then inhaled by the bystander or other members of the family or other members in the marketplace, and then they catch it, and within 2 or 3 days they're dead as well. Interesting. So, but it did progress across Western Europe, and the numbers of people that were killed were, you know, astronomical. But as my reading this morning indicates that actually more people died in 1918, 1919 from the influenza epidemic than died from the Black Plague, which is also an interesting piece. And I came across a question while I was reading this, or at least I devised a question, and that is, during the course of the Black Death, it never came to the Western Hemisphere, and yet smallpox did, measles did, and Black Death never came. But Black Death was out there in Western Europe at the time that the Spanish and later the English were exploring the Western Hemisphere. Why didn't they bring it with them when they came here?
No.
And the answer is, or why didn't we see it? And the answer that I concluded was that it was already here. And the indigenous population of the Western Hemisphere had already established an immune response to the organism. And so when it did arrive, if indeed it did, on the boats from Europe, the native population here had no difficulty dealing with it, and so didn't suffer from it as they did from smallpox or measles. So that's just an interesting aside.
Let me ask you this.
Sure.
If your theory is correct,
yes,
and it was here when the Europeans settled here or came here to explore I mean, they didn't have planes. They didn't have, you know, modes of transportation that they have now. How did it jump from Europe to the Americas?
Oh, well, what you need to understand, and this is a theory that is totally contrary to the mainstream archaeologists who believe that the inhabitants of the Western Hemisphere got here by walking across a land bridge that was present in what is now the Bering Sea and then walked from Alaska on down to Tierra del Fuego. And as a result of that migration populated the Western Hemisphere. And I don't believe that at all. There's clear evidence that the Chinese and the Japanese were here and they got here by boats. They just sailed here, and so they brought with them a variety of cultural artifacts that have been discovered and then carefully ignored. And I can tell you, on the West Coast in Oregon, when I lived there, I lived on the beach, and regularly we would go out on the beach and pick up, quote, floats, unquote, glass floats that were fashioned by and used by the Japanese fishermen, who were using the floats to float the edges of their nets to catch fish. And so here there's the Japanese fishing nets washing up on the Oregon coast, and nobody thought anything more of it, and they knew exactly where they came from, and nobody ever said, well, how'd they get here? Well, it's easy. The Japanese current just goes up and over and comes on down. So if you put a boat on the Japanese current, you'll be in California. And within, you know, a few months or so, and if you're clever enough, you bring a fish hook and you bring some water along with you or figure out a way to catch rainwater. So instead of walking across the Bering Strait and then hoping that you can walk all the way from there down into Central America and Mexico, is, in my opinion, not reasonable. And if you can drive a boat from Japan or China to the Western Hemisphere, then you can bring mice, rats, and various other creatures with you that could carry the disease and their fleas along with them. So it all fits together when you put the other pieces in there and just say, these people didn't walk from Asia to Mexico City. You know, even if you give them an unusual amount of time, it's just not reasonable. Anyhow, so that's how they got here. They took a boat.
Wow. Okay. So how deadly was it in the 14th century?
Say that again. What about how many people were dead?
How deadly was it in the 14th century?
Oh, it was horribly deadly. Absolutely horribly deadly. And people had no recourse, no place to go, and the disease was an incredibly painful disease in terms of the discomfort, or discomfort is nothing. The disease was so painful that persons who were afflicted by the bubonic plague would commit suicide for relief of the pains that they were feeling from the enlarged lymph glands in their groins and in their neck and in their armpits. The disease, when it moved to the lungs, would also impair the ability of the lungs to exchange or to take in oxygen. And so people would turn blue and become what's called cyanotic. And we saw this in the arms and legs, and then eventually it would go over the entire body, and also created what is called disseminated intravascular coagulation. So blood clots in blood vessels, especially small ones, or at least it would begin in small ones, and so they would have little areas of the skin that would turn purple or blue, and the physicians who were taking care of the unfortunate folks who had the disease would recognize this as a premonitory sign, and the individuals who had gotten to that point in the disease would be dead within 24 hours or so. What's also interesting is the bacterial organism that is responsible before the bubonic plague is a remarkably resilient and organism capable of mutating or changing to accommodate any efforts on the part of the humans to resist or defeat the organism. And so antibiotics are useful, but the organism very quickly develops a resistance to the antibiotics.
Wow. But they didn't have antibiotics back then, so it just spread like wildfire, right?
That is correct, yes. They hadn't, the concept of an antibiotic, the concept of germ theory was waited until Louis Pasteur came along and others came along much later in the 18th and 19th centuries, 1700, 1800. So they had no idea. They thought that this was some kind of a bad air, miasma theory, or humoral theory. That is, but you know, they just were totally flummoxed in terms of understanding what the heck was going on. They did have the concept, however, of isolation of areas or isolation of people to prevent the organism from spreading from one town to the next. And they did understand that the organism did move from one place to another, and if they interrupted the movement of the organism, then those persons who were spared by quarantining them, in a sense, the organism would they wouldn't get sick. So that occurred. The Italians figured that out, and they conceived of the term quaranto, from which we get the quarantine, and quaranto means 40. And so they would require that the boats, the trading vessels that came from Africa or from the Black Sea, but mostly from Africa, would have to stay in Sardinia or on offshore islands. And they built two large hospitals on two islands off the coast of Venice. And then upon those islands, they built what we would call hospitals. Lazarettos is what the Italian word for it was. And they would require the sailors and any passengers on those boats to stay there for 40 days, quarantine, before being allowed to come into Venice. So they understood that part of it, that quarantining was a critical aspect of control, disease control. But other than that, they had no idea of how it was spread in terms of the pneumonic plague. They had no idea about that, and they had no idea about the fleas, because everybody had fleas. And, you know, filth was what they lived in, unfortunately, there. And it wasn't until much later when the role of sanitation in disease prevention was appreciated much later in the 18th century, 1700s or so, was when people said, you know, why, you know, all of this bad smelling stuff laying around in the villages and the streets and the gutters and everywhere else might have something to do with the fact that we're always getting sick. Oh, you think we ought to clean this up? Yeah, it took a long, long time for people to recognize that sanitation was a critical public health movement or aspect or whatever word you want to comes to mind. That is, it was important to clean the streets and to take care of human waste, animal waste, dead animals, and thereby their health improved. But it took quite a while. My opinion is that the people who cleaned the streets and treated the water were far more effective in treating disease than any physicians ever were.
They weren't exactly, they didn't exactly practice good hygiene either, right? The people, the human beings?
Correct. Right. They didn't understand what was going on. And so either it wasn't important for them, or they just were living in an economically depressed area we call feudalism, that it was hard enough to get the next dinner, much less cleaning up the streets.
Or taking a bath, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, where are you going to take a bath?
Wow. Like,
that was a serious problem. Yeah, and
so,
it was not important. Changing clothes was not important. Doing the laundry was not important.
My God. Wow. I can't even imagine what the world smelled like in those days. Right?
Yeah, right. Well, exactly. I don't know if you've ever driven down the road and come upon a dead skunk on the side of the road. You probably get warned before you arrive, and then you can smell it
right
after you've gone by. Well, just imagine that, plus a whole bunch of other dead creatures. People who have no idea of how important it is to take care of animal and human waste in a way that separates one from the other, that is, the waste from the humans and the animals.
You know what, people, I'm concentrating on people who didn't practice good hygiene. I'm surprised there was even a human race. You know, of course, today people bathe and they brush their teeth and they wash their hair. That was not done in those days. And how did they cope with the smell of everybody like that?
That's an interesting question, and it points out how remarkably resilient humans are in terms of their ability to deal with infectious disease. Those that didn't deal with it died, and those whose immune system was capable of dealing with infection, they survived. As far as the niceties of horrible smells is concerned, the French invented perfumes. Okay, I don't know what else was going on that enabled them to tolerate it, but it was pretty awful.
So this happened in the 14th century.
Yes.
So from the 14th century to the beginning of the 20th century, was there any documentation of any plagues or viruses comparable to those two during that time span?
Yeah, smallpox is certainly that came along and originated again either in the Levant, or the area of Levant, where we have Syria, Lebanon, Palestine, Iraq, Iran, that area there, I believe, and also Egypt. To the best of my recollection, Egypt was a central starting point, or at least identified as a point where the smallpox virus originated and then spread from there. other plagues, those are the two primary ones. The human beings lived in filth, and they were chronically exposed to cholera, which every so often would rage through the countryside and kill off large numbers of people. It is a waterborne disease, and so if somebody gets sick and then defecates in an area that enables the fecal material to contaminate a source of water that people use for drinking or bathing, then that will get contaminated. And it moves on by primarily either through the water going downstream or by humans going along with it. We've ever heard of the term Typhoid Mary, which is a term referring to individuals who have the organism responsible for cholera, but are not sick, and so they can contaminate other water supplies or water sources that then we'll infect a whole another group of people. That so it spread. The cholera was the other one, the other major one. Measles was an epidemic that did go through Western Europe, and people died in Western Europe just like they did in the Western Hemisphere from that. And then the human race developed what's called herd immunity, and so the survivors were able to go on, and the children who, when they got sick with measles, would recover. Because it doesn't seem to be as terrible a disease with children who have no immunity. And I certainly remember having measles as a child, both of them, you know, the red measles and the usual regular measles. And so did many of the other children before the vaccination became available, and they all survived. It was the adults that got the measles who had not had prior exposure. Those were the ones that that didn't do well, and many of them died. So measles is another. Go ahead.
Is there still measles?
Oh, sure. Measles is still out there, no doubt about it.
Okay.
Not long ago, there was a report of a number of cases of measles in Brooklyn, and among unvaccinated children. I don't know if there were any deaths in that group, but my expectation is that most of them survived. When I was going through school, when I did a pediatric rotation, and we would take histories from the mothers of the children that were admitted to the hospitals, we would always ask about the childhood diseases. And almost invariably, the mothers would confirm that the children had the measles, mumps, chickenpox, and, you know, whatever else. Those are the three that come to my mind right away, and we'd just say usual childhood diseases and just mark that down on the chart.
Peter, we're out of time. We have about a minute left.
Yeah.
So can you kind of sum it all up, the 14th century Black Plague, in like a minute's time?
Yeah.
To the people who are listening?
Right. I don't think we're going to see that particular bacterial organism cause a problem for us in this day and age. The number of people who were killed by that organism was staggering. However, the virus that attacked the citizens of this planet in 1918 and 1990 was more lethal than the Black Plague in terms of numbers of persons who were
right.
killed.
Do you think the pandemic and 1918 and 19 was more lethal than what we're experiencing today?
Yes, so far.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
You know, we're just beginning. If you were to, you know, the epidemic of 1819 began in January or so, or at least records began to be kept reliable records
right.
in January of 18. And, you know, we started seeing evidence of this virus now as we look back in October and November of 19. It was not recognized for what it was back in October of 19. Or if it was, nobody wanted to tell us. But now as we look back, we see, oh, yeah, there were people who had it back then, and we're looking at it now. But anyhow, so we're just looking at this start, and I'm not sure. I'm certainly not going to predict that there will or will not be a second phase. The organism may or may not do that. And the organism is a very resilient and, I would say, very remarkable organism. These are living things that want to reproduce and survive. And
well,
they will do that. That's for sure.
Okay. So you have been listening to Dr. Peter Cookson, and this is All Access Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and if you like this show, follow us on Twitter, All Exits Closed. Thanks, Peter. Have a great day, and thank you, everybody, for listening.
Oh, you're welcome. Bye-bye, Cynthia.